Hi, everyone. This is Billy. Today, in light of the situation that has happened over the last few weeks, I'd like to share some of my personal experiences with the Rav over the last 25 years. But particularly, I'd like to focus on a few events that happened over the last 10 to 12 years. It was about 10, 12 years ago, I was with the Rav, and the Rav said to me that Karen is going to have a difficult time knowing, you know, how the Messiah, how the day of peace and immortality will actually arrive on earth. And the Rav said to me, you know what, I can't tell Karen because she's not going to be able to handle it. Now, at the time, I had no idea what the Rav was talking about. I thought, oh, my God, World War III, nuclear bombs or diseases. I just didn't understand. And then, 9 years ago, some 9 years ago, we know the Rav was hit with the stroke. And it forced Karen, you know, to travel the world and to take the reins of the Kabbalah Center. And as we know in the Zohar teaches, it's very, very clear. There's a very famous phrase from the Bible, from the writings that say, when the moon shines as bright as the sun, the day of redemption will come. Meaning when the female is equal to the male, when the desire to receive, which is the female, has been transformed into the desire to share, which is male, we will achieve our redemption. So it happens on many levels, and this is why Moses had to leave the world. Moses, as we know from the Zohar and Rabbi Shimon, absolutely never died. He was concealed the same way the sun doesn't die each night. The sun sets. The sun is concealed in order to allow the moon to shine. And so Moses had to set upon the horizon in order to allow Joshua to shine, Joshua being the moon. Because when the sun is shining, you can't see the moon. And so if the Rav would have been here 9 years ago in full force, Karen, the female, the physical earth, would not have the opportunity to shine. And this is the prerequisite for the arrival of immortality and our redemption. That is the process that has to take place. So what was amazing is that a week before the stroke, the Rav took me aside and said, it was actually at third meal on Shabbat, and the Rav just gave a lecture to everybody about the power of certainty. And after the Rav gave the lecture, the Rav called me over to, you know, to the head table, and I leaned down beside the Rav, and the Rav started lecturing me, saying, Billy, how many people really understood what I just said? I mean, how, and I'm really being accurate now in conveying the conversation the Rav gave to me. I'm going to try to describe it exactly the way the Rav said it. The Rav said, Billy, who has that kind of certainty to say false alarm? Billy, no matter what you see, who could say false alarm? No matter what you see, no matter what's in front of you, who has the ability to have certainty and say false alarm? Did you hear me, Billy? No matter what you see. A week later, the Rav had the stroke. The doctors told Karen, there's no brain left. The whole frontal lobe of the Rav's brain was blown out, and Karen was going to have to make a decision whether to pull the plug or not, because the Rav would be a vegetable. I was there at the hospital for Shabbat. The family couldn't go to Rosh Hashanah in Israel because of what happened. And we had the certainty. I just hung on to the words the Rav told me. No matter what you see. So as the Rav laid there in a coma, a vegetable with no brain left in the frontal lobe, I just hung on to the words of the Rav, which was, no matter what you see, false alarm, total certainty. By third meal, the Rav did the third meal blessing of the wine, the Kiddush, from the coma. He literally woke up, did the Kiddush, and went back to sleep. And we were over the hump. And the doctors were absolutely stunned. and one of the top brain surgeons in the United States, a guy named Dr. David Baskin, stood up on Passover about a year later and showed the charts of the Rub's brain, the x-rays, and said how you cannot look in any medical journal in the world to figure out how the Rub pulled this off. About 3 weeks after the stroke happened, the Rub was literally, you know, semi-comatose. You know, you sleep a lot for months and months and months as you finally go through physical therapy, and slowly you wake up and come to. So about 2-3 weeks after the stroke, and the Rub was now home from the hospital, the Rub was literally sleeping, you know, 24 hours a day. But Karen called me up, and Karen asked me to come over one night. I live around the corner from the Rub and Karen in their old house. And I went over there with my wife, Marianne, and Karen said, come on over, and we'll study the Zohar. We'll study Pinchas, you know, to bring healing to the Rub. I come into the house, and the Rub is seated at the head table in his dining room, sleeping. And we sat down, and Karen put a Zohar down in front of the Rav, and, you know, she's nudging the Rav, you know, Rav, wake up, wake up, wake up. And the Rav, you know, wouldn't wake up. He's just sleeping. And then the Rav, with his hand, pushed the Zohar over to me. I was sitting, you know, beside the Rav. So I screamed loud, because I knew the Rav was sleeping, Rav, should I read the Zohar? And the Rav just nodded, yes. So I opened up the Zohar, and I read one paragraph. After reading the one paragraph, the Rav, eyes still closed, sleeping there, slouched over in his chair, turned around and grabbed a telephone that was situated on the credenza behind the Rav. He took the telephone and placed it onto the table and then shoved it in front of me. The Rav then picked up the receiver on the phone and handed it to me. I took the receiver. The Rav punched some random buttons on the phone. I put the receiver to my ear, and there was my voice reading the Zohar I had just read aloud 1 minute ago. When I heard my voice reading the Zohar, I screamed, I went, ah! The Rav woke up, looked me in the eye, raised his fingers, pointed finger, and said to me, what's the matter, Billy? You don't believe? And went back to sleep. So I knew the Rav was giving me a message. The Rav was in full control, the same way the Rav told me a week before, no matter what you see, it's an illusion. No matter what you see, false alarm. There's a higher order taking place. There are things happening we don't see. I got the strength when the Rav did that to have total certainty the Rav was in absolute control. It was the most mind-blowing, uncanny situation, one of the most I've seen it in my 25 years at the center. It was more scary, more amazing than hearing my own voice on the phone. Was the Rav waking up and saying, what's the matter, Billy? You don't believe? As if the Rav never left. Now, let's jump ahead. About 5 weeks ago, I went to the hospital. The Rav was in a coma again, sleeping. Doctors couldn't wake him up. Ruthie Rosenberg said to me, Billy, see what you can do if you can wake up the Rav. I felt kind of foolish. I mean, what am I going to do? But so I started screaming, Rav, Rav, wake up, wake up. You know, we're nudging the Rav, but nothing's happening. And I kind of knew, you know, I'm not there to wake up the Rav physically. And so it's me, Ruthie, and Dominic. We're sitting there in the hospital room. Rav's not waking up. I sat down. And then in my mind, I just had this sense, this feeling. I knew what was happening. I said, Rav, I know the Rav is upstairs now working. He's working and pushing this world closer towards the Messiah, closer towards our redemption. And that's why the Rav's not waking up. This isn't just a man sick in bed asleep. This is the Rav. I had total certainty. I said, but Rav, just give me a sign. I don't need the sign. I have certainty, but give me the sign. Because then I'll go home. I'll go back to work. I won't stand here and worry about what's going on in the 1%. That's not my job. That was Ruthie's job. That was Dominic's job. I know my job was to go back and do the work that I came to do. So I said, Rav, just give me a sign. Make make one of the machines beep, or maybe just open your eyes just for 10 seconds, and then you can go back to sleep. Give me one or the other. Within 10 seconds, the machines in that hospital room started beeping, beep, 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 like crazy. And at the same time, the Rav opened his eyes. I said, thank you, Rav. I said goodbye to Ruthie and Dominic, and I left. So both during the stroke, when the Rav put my voice on that phone, I don't know how he did it, and I heard my voice reading Zohar, and the Rav woke up and said, what's the matter, Billy? You don't believe? Don't be so surprised. And when the Rav made the machines beep 9 years later, 5 weeks ago, and opened up his eyes for like a few seconds and went back to sleep, it's as if the Rav was winking to me, telling me the Rav is in control. So I drew a lot of strength from that. Even though there was tremendous pain, I knew the Rav was working. I knew the Rav was propelling this world forward towards our final redemption, because that's what a Kabbalist does. And then the last time I saw the Rav in this world was just before Yom Kippur. I went to the hospital. The Rav was in tremendous, tremendous pain. The Rav had heart issues, then kidney issues, then a hip issue, and all the organs of the Rav's body were in a battle with Satan. And I knew that's what was going on. This wasn't just some man sick, and he had a heart issue, then he had a brain issue, then he had a kidney issue. No, this was the Rav taking on Satan, especially if you study Zohar, you see how all the organs of the body manifest as all the nations of the world, and they also manifest as the spheroid and all the upper world dimensions. So it's a battle to remove Satan from this world. So I knew what the Rav was going through, spiritually speaking. So when I was in that hotel room just before Yom Kippur, the hospital room, not the hotel room, when I was in that room and the Rav was wincing and groaning and squirming in pain, the Rav didn't even know I was in the room. So after a few minutes, I knew it was just time to leave. And I went to say goodbye to the Rav, not knowing that would be the last time. I just said, goodbye, Rav, and, huck some math for Yom Kippur. The Rav literally stopped wincing, stopped groaning, woke up, and gave me a big, fat, knowing smile. A smile that was just like a wink. It was a famous trademark smile of the Rav. And I knew the Rav was saying, the Rav is in control. And I left. And the next time I saw the Rav was in the hospital after the Rav had left. Karen was holding the Rav's hand. The Rav, he was glowing. It was unbelievable. But, of course, it was devastating at the same time. I thought back to something I learned from the Rav. And what I learned and what the Rav brought to the world is what happened on Mount Sinai. Because there's not a rabbi, there's not a priest, there was not even a pope in history who knew the real story of Sinai and what Sinai was all about, which was the arrival of immortality on earth. Not the revelation of 10 commandments. The revelation of the two tablets was simply the methodology for channeling the light flowing through the 10 dimensions, the 10 spherot, not 10 commandments, to reveal that light into our world, to remove darkness and death. That's what Moses achieved. And the world was in a state of immortal, deathless existence. The problem was, as the Rav teaches, it was Moses who achieved this state of immortality, not the 600,000 Israelites who stood at Sinai, which was a problem because we came to this world to remove bread of shame. We came to this world to earn the revelation of immortality and light, not to have it given to us carte blanche by God or given to us now by Moses. So the Israelites had to do one thing. They had to achieve total certainty, as the Rav says, no matter what. These are the three most important words on earth that I learned from the Rav. No matter what? But what about what? No, 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 no. You can't say, but what about? You can't say, yeah, but what if? No matter what means, no matter what. So here's what happened. We had a state of immortality. The Israelites just had to earn it. Now, conventional religion for 2,000 years, whether you're a Muslim, a Christian, or a Jew, has told us we lost paradise on Mount Sinai because of the sin of the golden calf. Moses went up the mountain, Moses didn't return, and the Torah tells us the Israelites then panicked, and they built the golden calf and began to worship it because they thought Moses wasn't coming back, and that's the sin we're still paying for to this very day. Baloney, says the Rav.
I'm a little uncomfortable with it, but not terrible. But
so what really happened is that the force called Satan, our opponent, our adversary, was given permission to test the Israelites. Satan actually conjured up a vision of Moses being dead. So 600,000 Israelites saw Moses dead, and they actually saw the angels carrying Moses up to heaven. So now if you see Moses dead, what are you supposed to believe? That's why the Israelites built the golden calf. They saw Moses dead. I mean, if you see somebody dead with your own eyes and your five senses, what are you supposed to believe? But the Israelites forgot the one rule: certainty no matter what. But they didn't have certainty. They believed the vision. They believed what their eyes told them, that Moses was dead. Their certainty was shattered. And that is what caused the shattering of the two tablets and the building of the golden calf. The Israelites thought Moses was dead. They weren't stupid enough to build a calf to worship some calf. What they built the calf for was as a technology, which I won't go into in this phone call. It was a technology to give them access to the Sfirot, to the 99% reality, because they thought Moses was dead and they didn't want to lose the connection. The problem wasn't the building of the golden calf. The problem was they lost certainty in Moses and the light. This is what really happened. I just watched a video of the Rav. It's posted on my Facebook page, where at the last half of the video, the Rav explains, we are not in this world to perform all the precepts of the Torah. We're not in this world to keep Shabbat, to observe the Sabbath, to observe Rosh Hashanah. We're not here to make our connections on Yom Kippur. We're not here to make our connections on Passover. That is not the objective of life on earth. Wow, I'm keeping the Sabbath. Wow, I'm doing what I'm supposed to do. No. The Rav says clearly, we are here to achieve certainty. Keeping the Sabbath, using Rosh Hashanah, using the tools of the Torah, is simply the methodology to help us attain that certainty. It's a means to an end. It's not the objective. But we get corrupted, confused, misunderstood, and we start thinking that the aim is to keep the observances of the Torah. And if we think we're doing that, we're done. We finished our job. It's not. We are, and the Rav even said, Satan has taken those precepts of the Torah and all these practices and connections, and he owns them now because we're doing them for the wrong reason. We have to use those tools to evolve our certainty to repair the damage that we did on Sinai when we lost our certainty. We have to have certainty the same way Moses didn't die, the Rav didn't die. Moses went behind a curtain, the Rav went behind a curtain. This is not about denial. This is not about refusal to accept reality. This is about elevating to a higher level of consciousness and realizing there's a higher reality. And through our transformation, through our certainty, by getting rid of our own ego, which is the source of our doubt, we can tear down that curtain, help Karen, the female, the moon, to shine as bright as the sun, and we can experience, and the Rav says this in his lecture. Go to my website page, sorry, my Facebook page, and you'll watch the lecture, and especially at the end, the Rav explains, when we have that certainty, we will ignite the resurrection of the dead. And resurrection of the dead doesn't mean people are going to start climbing out of graves like zombies in the TV show Walking Dead. Resurrection of the dead means the curtain comes down and we realize the dead never left us. They're simply in another dimension, and the process of death is simply our interpretation of that transformation, of that elevation, and that through our own efforts at sharing that Zohar, because it's the Zohar that's the light of immortality, it's the Zohar that's going to ignite resurrection through our certainty, through our behavior and our dissemination of the Zohar. That is how the curtain will come down, and we will see everybody who has ever walked this earth. We will all be back together again in the final bodies that we achieve our transformation, and the world will be reunited, and it will be as though we woke up from a dream. We'll realize, wow, what a dream that was. But because we went through this dream of 5,760-some-odd years, through that dreaming process, we have evolved the consciousness through our transformation to appreciate the light, to appreciate the immortality, to appreciate the paradise that has now been given to us, because we will have earned it through our own hard work instead of God just giving it to us or Moses doing it for us on our behalf. All we came to do was to bring that certainty. Now, that can mean many things. If somebody yells at you or cuts you off on the highway and you get mad and you react, it means you don't have certainty. You don't believe it really came from the light. You don't believe it's just payback for some other negative behavior you did, and you're not embracing it with certainty to know that, wow, I get a chance to fix and repair my previous actions. If we're reactive, we're not certain. So certainty is not an intellectual concept. Oh, I have certainty. The Rav never left. Baloney. We don't see the Rav now. We feel the lack, and it's there. That lack is there. So it's not an intellectual choice. Oh, the Rav never left. Oh, the light's in the business. No, you have to go into the pain. You have to go into the lack, into the sorrow, and then climb out of it by transforming yourself. You're going to take the pain on the ego when people insult you or hurt you. You only can get to heaven by going to hell. We're only going to get to immortality by tasting the illusion of death, the pain and sorrow of loss. But if we can arouse, ignite our certainty in the light, our certainty in the mission of spreading Zohar, our certainty, most important, of allowing our egos to be diminished, that is how we rise out of the pain, transform the pain into fulfillment, transform the illusion of death into the reality of immortality, and change the world once and for all. Look, not everybody can handle these kind of ideas. Not everybody was meant to handle these kinds of ideas. Not every cell in the human body is a heart cell. There are liver cells, there are kidney cells, there are pancreas cells, there are brain cells. Every one of us plays a different role in the one body of humanity. But the Israelites, the people who walk the path of Kabbalah and Torah, we are the heart cells, the cells that share the blood flow, the light flow, the light of the Creator with the rest of the world through the power of our certainty and our ability to raise our consciousness and to see the illusion for what it is, the illusion of ego, the illusion of death, the illusion of chaos, but to transform it, not intellectually, it'll never happen, to go through the pain and to purify our consciousness, purify our ego, purify, transform it. So instead of serving ourselves, we serve others. Through that process, and especially through the sharing of Zohar, we will achieve what the Rav said in that video, through our certainty, resurrection of the dead and the arrival of immortal existence, meaning the curtain will come down and we will see true reality. This is why I believe the Rav winked at me, metaphorically speaking, before the stroke, telling me about it, during the stroke when he had my voice on the phone and he warned me to better believe. When he opened up his eyes 5-6 weeks ago in the hospital room, when those machines, hospital machines, were beeping like crazy, to tell us the Rav is in control. But the same way Moses couldn't do it for us, the Rav can't do it for us. He can only give us the tools. We have those tools. It's called the Zohar. That is our mission. It is a sacred, holy mission. And if you can bring certainty to the table, and work through your pain, your confusion, and get to a level of certainty, we will absolutely achieve the final redemption in our lifetime. Thank you very much.